Succession number 20274, Reel 3.
Ron Newbold, Reel 3.
So now everybody's all waiting on the Belgian border, and we're now going into the famous operation called Market Garden. And this was led off by the Guards Armoured Division through the famous Joe's Bridge, and they advanced up the only road in those days from there right up through Holland to Arnhem. There was only one road, now there's hundreds of roads now, but that day, in those days, there was one main road all the way, which we had to fight very hard for. After the Guards Armoured Division advanced to the other side of Eindhoven and up that way, we was taken in with Churchill's, and ourselves, one thing I forgot to say, because of the advance and not having any transporters, all our Churchill tanks had had to come by road from Veer all that way. This caused some problems, because the bogies that carry the tracks on a Churchill were not ball bearing. The shafts were just metal to metal, and after so many miles, the drivers have to get out and put grease into them, otherwise they seize up. But of course, this is what happened to quite a lot of the tanks, and it took us about 3 weeks to get all our tanks together. And Eindhoven was our headquarters, where we formed up, and it was from there that our commanding officer, or the brigade commander, informed the commanding division that he now had a fighting brigade, all tanks were with them and all ready to move off. We then joined into the action. Tilburg was our first battle, and we had lots of little skirmishes all around these little Dutch canals and around these little Dutch villages, but the battle for Tilburg was rather easily taken, because on the night it was taken, the 28th of September 1944, our own reconnaissance troop had gone out and into Tilburg and had found that the Germans were evacuating the town. They'd radio back to the commanding officer of the 2nd Battalion Coldstream Guards this was happening. He got in charge of the brigade majors and those sort of officers. And it was found that the grenadiers were bogged down in some woods or something and were not easily obtainable, and the Scots Guards had been held up by a broken water main or something like that, and it was only our battalion that could move. So we were ordered to advance into Tilburg, which we took in the early hours of the morning, without a shot being fired. Finding all the Germans are gone, so we took the town all and said Tilburg was now ours. And in the early hours of the morning, when the infantry came in, which it's all been planned that we attack Tilburg in the morning, and when the infantry came in, they found that the town was already in the hands of the British, namely the Coldstream Guards. And this has now all been written into the history of Tilburg and its liberation, which celebrations are held every 28th of September every year.
What happened to you when you got into Tilburg?
Well, we made a great fuss of by the Dutch people. They all wanted to give us what they had, what wasn't very much. They had very little to eat or drink, but they had been very crafty. They'd put false ceilings into a lot of the bigger houses, into the roof of their living rooms and that sort of thing. And when they were sure that the Germans had all gone, they broke down these false ceilings, and all sorts of things came out, champagne and liqueurs and all sorts of things. So we had a very welcome reception from the Dutch people in Tilburg.
And then, what do you remember next?
Well, the next big, I say there was lots of little skirmishes in all the little villages. Every day we was moving around. But the next one was Overloon, which is very nearly on the Dutch-German frontier. And it's a very wooded country. And there was a very hard fought battles there by most regiments in Overloon, especially our own tanks. The battle for the Rice Wall Forest, and eventually we're now back into the bad weather at Christmas time and all that, but we did get through the forest and into Germany. Again, it's saying this, it all sounds very simple, but remember that every day was another day to be alive. Even if you weren't in the front line, there were shells and all sorts of things flying around, and so you never really knew that one day might be yours.
Any incidents that happened to you personally at this time?
No, I was very fortunate, actually. As regards that sort of thing, I didn't really probably have the best of it, apart from the apprehension, you know, one day to another, doing what you could, getting the supplies up, one thing and another. The Rice Wall Forest, we slept in the Rice Wall Forest for quite some time, just in among the trees, camouflaged and all that sort of thing. But eventually the forward troops won the battle, and we broke through into the Germany towns itself. Name's gone.
Not Cleves.
Cleve, that's it. Cleve was the first German town that we took, yes. Which we found had been very badly damaged, because apparently we'd asked Cleve if the German commander would evacuate it, because it was apparently a town of great big Gothic buildings, a lovely town, I understand. But he refused, and so we said, if you don't move, we shall shell it and bomb it, and which was done. By the time we arrived in there, it was just a mass of bricks and rubble. What houses were left standing we used as billets or that sort of thing. And this is more or less the way through Germany. Being an independent brigade, of course, we fought with all sorts of regiments, mostly with the 15th Scottish Division. The Scottish boys were very good. They had great morale, I think, the Scottish chaps. And we also fought with the 101 Airborne. They actually used our Churchill tanks as reconnaissance tanks for their advance, which seemed rather funny at the time. But the 101 Airborne was a very good American fighting soldier, and so we proceeded right through Germany, and our last place of was fighting for Kiel. That's where we finished up in Kiel. The biggest trouble we had in Kiel, that they had a naval school there, and they were all young naval, all young Germans, and they refused to surrender, and we had to go through the forest and all sorts of places, and the only answer they would answer to was a bullet, more or less. Once we'd rounded all these young lads up, life was very quiet for a few days. Until it was realised that that part of Germany was also in the Russian zone, which everybody was quickly moved out of. I think it seemed to me the British were more frightened of Uncle Joe than they were of the Germans. We actually came all the way back from Kiel to a place called Monschau, which is just outside Aachen. Now back on the German-Belgian border.
Had you seen any fighting personally at Kiel?
No.
As you were advancing through Germany, what was the attitude of German civilians towards you?
Oh, they didn't want us at all. They wouldn't talk to us, and if they could, I suppose, do anything against us, they would. But we didn't. Mostly, we were kept away from, I think, because if we went into a village or a town to be, have a rest or that sort of thing, as they say, they would make sure that the area where we were, the Germans had been taken away from the houses. We'd ordered them out, and we took over the German houses as billets for a few days while we stayed there. The idea being, I think, to teach the Germans that this is what they'd done to other people in France and Belgium, and this was a little bit of trying to show them that you can't do that, but can't just turn people out of their houses and take it over. But that was the idea, I think, to just to show them that it wasn't nice. Now we're back in Monschau, and this is more or less is after the war now. We stayed there, border patrols. I'd lost my job as a technical store sergeant, having no tanks. The tanks were taken away from us at Kiel, but they all went to the docks at Hamburg. We were now clustered in an infantry battalion again, with a few of our soft vehicles, 50 underweight, 30 underweight trucks, a few scout cars. And I think we'd retained our reconnaissance troop, which were honey tanks, just to guard the frontiers. And it was from there, in the December of 45, that I got my demob and came home.
Did you have any problems with displaced persons in the occupation of Germany?
There was problems. I didn't have anything personal, but I understand in Aachen, we used to... send a few people out there to guard and that sort of thing, but they had camps there with all the displaced persons of whatever nationality. They tried to put them together in their own camp because, like they are today, they would fight among themselves and they were causing more killings and more damage to each other. So until we could get them back into their own country, we had to try and keep them separated. And I understand there were some very great problems in Aachen and the camps around Aachen. But I don't know, I haven't seen anything personally of it.
And so you were saying December 1945?
I was sent home, demobbed.
And so was that the end of your service completely? Yeah.
Well, I came home and actually my service finished in the March of 1946, and that was maybe 9 years service in the Coldstream Guards when I was demobbed.
How do you feel now about having served in Coldstream Guards?
Very happy about it, really. I enjoyed my service, perhaps because I was lucky during the war, but I did enjoy my peacetime service. I found great comradeship. Yes, I've got one thing to say, that when we went into Eindhoven, waiting for the reinforcement or the tanks to get together again, we were supposed to be billeted in a school at the time. But the Dutch people were so happy to see us that they said no way, and they more or less forced our billeting people to let them take two or three soldiers into the house. I was on my own in a Dutch house where the people couldn't speak any English and I couldn't speak any Dutch, but by good sign language and various things we understood one another, and these people were very, very poor. They wanted to give me an address to come back and see him after the war. And the only thing that the man of the house could do was to write his name and his wife and his daughter's name was on the back of a 5 gulden note, and which I kept for many years. I never went back. But on the 50th anniversary of that, I was in Eindhoven, and I kept this 5 gulden note. And I framed it and made a little story of it, how I'd come across it. One of my other Dutch friends had located the family, which now the mother and father were dead, but the daughter was still alive. And I managed to present her at the town hall in Tilburg with this 5 gulden note and the story of how I obtained it, because she was only a small girl and didn't really understand.